Welcome to Covenant Presbyterian Church in West Des Moines, Iowa. This educational offering is part of our mission to bless our neighbors to the glory of God. We hope it blesses you.
Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Nathan.
Thank you for getting here on such a cold morning. You had a cell phone with you in the car, right? In case something had happened along the way. Okay. That's a lot of distance to cover. Yeah. He said, as if you haven't done that before, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been 50 some odd years as a circuit rider, so what's the deal?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
so, and thanks everybody for your patience on the whole coffee situation. We're a couple coffee people short this morning, so getting the job done here. Okay, so we're going to talk about the DNA of listening this morning. The DNA of listening. As we continue looking at how to be church in our neighborhoods. Neighborhoods, plural, right? Because we're talking not only or even primarily about the neighborhood immediately surrounding this church building, although we could have that conversation too, but I also want to talk about the neighborhoods we spend all of our time in. Those could be neighborhoods we live in, those could be neighborhoods we work in, those could be neighborhoods that consist of the network of relationships that we carry through the world. And I gave you an assignment last week. Do you remember your assignment? I asked you to, I asked you to take a little bit of time to write down what your neighbors offer. What do your neighbors offer? The fancier word for that is asset mapping. So on top of that sort of conceptual map that you drew a couple weeks ago of what does your neighborhood look like, what do your relationships with your neighbors look like, which includes like who lives where, and then you can tell us stories about, you know, who puts on the 4th of July potluck, or who is it that that you've got this particular little neighbor spat going on with. So that's sort of it's a relational map that I had you draw a couple of weeks ago. And then I wanted you to look at, okay, that's sort of who's where, but what do people specifically offer me? So when I looked at what do my neighbors offer, and I was looking specifically in the neighborhood immediately around my house, I have neighbors who offer tools. I have neighbors who offer sort of the work of being, it's not like an organized neighborhood watch, but being the ones who are attentive to everything that goes on the street. I've got neighbors who connect everybody else in the neighborhood, or at least those of us who are connected tend to be connected through a particular neighbor. I mentioned last week as we were talking about things that are assets and things that are sticky points with our neighbors, and I said that our backyard is the backyard that wants everybody else's leaves after they fall off the tree, because we mulch our garden with those. And we happen not to have any mature trees on our property. And so we have to import leaves from elsewhere in the neighborhood, which means on my asset map of the neighborhood are a whole bunch of leaves. And there are many other big, beautiful, mature trees in the neighborhood. So there's lots of leaves to go around, and we take all of them.
You want us to bring ours?
Yeah.
So I won't rake them for you, but I will dump them on my garden. Our neighbors may see our backyard as an asset in the neighborhood, right? As a place they can dump their leaves, and they don't have to buy the yard bags. Or they buy the yard bag, we go over, dolly them over to our house, dump them out, take the empty yard bag back.
Oh, they so, like that.
Hey,
oh,
yeah.
You know? But we also have, this has been important this week, neighbors with snowblowers, right? Neighbors who offer hospitality to others in the neighborhood. We've got neighbors that I know serve as the emergency call person for when another neighbor in the neighborhood has to press their life alert button. Through the network of relationships, I've gotten to know who it is that is the call person when that happens, which is not directly an asset to me, but it's sure sort of a secondhand asset, right? That I know that our neighbor has someone to count on when they need someone call for. We've got a neighbor who, as I mentioned last week, just before contemporary issues, our dog had gotten out briefly. And so I was really quickly asset mapping my neighborhood to figure out who are the neighbors that I can get in touch with who would be help with a dog who's gotten out. We have a few that, you know, that have dogs of their own that know our dog and so forth, that were right there ready to go when we had, and our dog has been found, he's fine. He was only out for a few minutes. But it was that moment, right, that you have to think, who would I call, right? So that's part of, that's really one way into the question of what do your neighbors offer? Who would you call, right? So what do your neighbors offer?
We have a neighbor across the street that's always willing, if we're going out of town, to put our mail in for us. Anything else? We don't ask them, but our trash cans are empty when we get back. And
right.
And we count on them.
Yeah.
Now they're gone this weekend. I'm feeding their kitty.
And you're feeding their kitty. So that sort of, that reciprocal kind of service. Yeah.
Back in 1975, we had only been in town a couple weeks.
And okay.
Sunday morning, one of our kids ended up with a gash in his head. So, we had met the Radigans who were up the street.
We met them here.
Okay, who do we call? Let's call the Radigans and find out where to take a kid
right.
on a Sunday morning. It was very nice to.
Right, so they had information about how to handle an emergency in your neighborhood.
And that's how we got our first family doctor.
There you go. That's the right kind of recommendation.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else do your neighbors offer?
What I've found is that our street is very long to begin with, and it's changed a great deal. Also, like, there's like four houses that are right on the corner, two, one across from us and the one behind us, etc., like you were talking about last week.
Mm-hmm.
The next door neighbor has the tools, and over the years we've traded off, or if we've been gone, they use the snowblower and everything. But now we're at the point with age, and our neighbor isn't as well as he was, and they contracted with somebody to come and do the snow.
Mm-hmm.
As has another neighbor. And so a lot of it, we're down to watching each other's houses when we leave.
Sure.
But the bulk of the people, just because of the way our lives are, we don't even know them anymore.
And that's going to be where we're headed, is how do we get out and get to know those neighbors? The ways that these relationships work change over time, and what we and our neighbors offer change over time. These were neighbors who offered tools, who offered the ability to run the snowblower if you weren't available to do it. And now the what they have to offer is different. I'm not even going to say it's less. In some of the categories, it may be less. But it's different what your neighbors offer now. And then, as you say, there are neighbors who you can't asset map these neighbors because you don't know them yet. Yeah.
I was going to say, why not for privacy?
Privacy?
Yeah, I'm busy all day, and then I just want to go home and shut the door and not talk to anybody. Except for Patty across the street, who took care of my cats when I was coming.
So okay.
She's the only one. I know the last name.
Right.
I'm the only one I've been to her house, and she's been to mine.
So you've got cat-sitting services right there in the neighborhood, and privacy is not an unreasonable thing to want, right? You know, part of no, because part of I'm increasingly convinced that part of intimacy is to know when your space will be respected, right? So to be able to have a relationship with your neighbors means that you also have the ability to say, you know, I'm having my space right now. Later on, maybe we'll have, you know, later on we'll have coffee together. Later on, we'll, you know, that we can have these. There needs to be sort of a give and take there, right? So I mentioned that there's. In our neighborhood, we've got the sort of the neighborhood watch neighbor. And there's a difference between the neighborhood watch neighbor and the nosy neighbor, right? And it's a difference of degree, but it's a difference of degree that is also a difference in type, right? Because if it's just, you know, I'm out here on the front porch seeing what's going on, as opposed to I'm going to get all up in everybody's business about what they're doing in spaces that they don't need to be watched, right? And different neighborhoods and different cultural arrangements do this differently. So there is a cultural layer to where that distinction is between privacy and what, isolation, right? Or between attentiveness and nosiness. So there are cultural layers there, but there are also, if you don't have that distinction, then it's harder to have a relationship. This is part of the difficulty of neighboring, right? That we want relationships with our neighbors, and we want those relationships to be on mutual terms. So privacy is actually a really good thing for your neighbors to offer. Marilee and then Marilyn.
Sometimes they're professional services.
Uh-huh.
When our home in West Des Moines, we had it sited, and they did a horrible job. It was buckling and everything. We have across the street, both he and her were both attorneys. And so they were very glad to visit with me about what is involved if you wanted to bring a small claims, you know, mm-hmm. something.
Yeah, professional services.
Yeah.
You don't get to know those things without knowing your neighbors.
We knew them, and I knew that I could just ask some basic questions about Yeah.
Right.
And they were glad to sit out in the back patio and talk to me about it.
Great. Marilyn, what do your neighbors offer?
Well, Bob and I live in a townhome association of 30 units, so we have sort of the associations are a little stronger, and we started Prairie Gardens.
Mm.
And so we at first there are little plugs, they needed watering, so we strung hoses and watered each other's gardens to keep mm-hmm. it going. So that was kind of the neat thing.
Yeah, and so there's some labor that your neighbors offered, and there's some organizational skill, right?
Right.
To put together not just where do the hoses need to go, but who's going to do this over the course of the time it takes to establish these prairie plans.
And there are people who are aging, and one neighbor directly next to us is taking care of her mother with dementia. And Bob and I had that experience. And so I just said, if you ever run into needing some help or any type or 15 minutes to yourself or, you know, call me over. I haven't been, she hasn't taken me up on that yet, but it's nice to have people that understand and feel comfortable in this.
Yeah. So as you think about what your neighbors offer, you may also recognize that you offer something, right? That this, what do my neighbors offer, is not only a one-way street. So so Bob and Marilyn offer understanding in a way that neighbor may need at some point, right? Or may need right now and doesn't know yet the way they want to ask for that. But that understanding of, you know, I've been down this road before, and I've got a little bit of sense of what you might need in offer, right? So you are also an asset in your neighborhood. And you're allowed to know that about yourself too. That's what partnership is about, right? Knowing that not only do those I'm in partnership with offer something to me, but I offer something to them, and that can go both directions at the same time. Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit about listening today. And listening is one of those core practices of being church that we don't always remember is a core practice of being church, that if we don't hear each other, then it's hard to build those relationships, right? So Marilee, when you needed a little lawyerly consultation about how to respond to this botched siting job, you were able to have that in the context of a relationship that it sounds like you already had with your neighbor, because you had had conversations before. And conversations are conversations when we really hear each other. I'm going to read a paragraph here from page 35, if you are interested in reading along with me, talking about listening and sort of the need for listening culturally in America today. And it's that inset paragraph on page 35. We all feel it. This is a time of collective frustration, this impasse of angry proportion. We are all living it, and we are all diminished by it. This is not who we are. We are a nation founded upon the very idea of tolerance. How did we get here? Somewhere along the way, we let go of each other's hands. We stopped creating connections and started severing ties. Today, we are a nation with our hands over our ears. Have we become afraid to listen? To listen is risky, because when we truly listen, we just might change our minds. To listen is risky, but to not listen is riskier. We believe it's time to consider, think, explore, and question. To appreciate our differences and find our commonalities. To reach across the fence, build the bridge, open our minds. To talk, and most of all, listen. That was language from one of those projects to help us listen to each other, primarily, especially across political and cultural lines, but talking about reaching across the fence, I have literal fences to reach across, right? Literal fences between my own backyard and my neighbor's backyard. And to build those relationships has to acknowledge the fence, right? Has to acknowledge that there is something between us, and it may just be the distance of privacy, right? It may just be the distance that allows us to, I'm this person and you are that person. And there may be other things. There may be suspicion about, well, how will this conversation go? Either because I've seen what yard sign is in their front yard, or because they moved into this neighborhood after we did, and I'm not sure whether they're like this neighborhood used to be. So the question within our neighborhoods is, how do we reach across to each other? The video for this chapter, again, this is one of those places where the book is primarily pitched at churches that already have organizations that they're in some kind of relationship with. But you've got neighbors you're in some kind of relationship with. So this is where you get to do that work of translating from a congregational setting to your own neighborhood setting. And it's gonna talk about what we need to do in listening, what we accomplish as listeners. So I will give you this video, and then we will come back to conversation.
I'm Kryn Van Tottenhove, co-author of Neighborhood Church and pastor here at Emmanuel Presbyterian in San Antonio. Today we'll be looking at Chapter 2, The DNA of Listening. Theologian Paul Tillich famously said, "The first duty of love is to listen." Yet we live in a time that is sorely divided. Over so many issues, people have closed their ears to each other. It is essential for local churches to not only model a new way of listening, but to realize a fundamental fact that is central to both this book and the disciplines of asset-based community development. Many of the answers for our future ministries will be found in the dreams and the abilities and the life of the neighbors around us. In order to hear, we have to thread the DNA of listening into our churches. The key is how to get started. To find points of contact with our neighbors so that we can begin hearing what God wants to reveal through them. Consider Emmanuel Presbyterian. This Mexican-American church was founded 75 years ago on the south side of San Antonio, and many of its current members are descendants of those original founders. Today, this area of San Antonio struggles with poverty and segregation. Like so many mainline Protestant churches, EPC was much larger in the past. But many of its members moved to other parts of the city, and theological shifts in the denomination drove some others away. Today it is a small congregation, just now able to afford a half-time pastor. Yet there is a sense of hope, a belief that God has new mission frontiers for this church that will begin with the art of listening. But where to listen? How to listen? EPC's most frequent contact with the community takes place weekly at their food pantry, when hundreds of people come to receive provisions provided through the San Antonio Food Bank. The elders of Emmanuel decided to ask three open-ended questions of their neighbors at these weekly gatherings. What are some of your dreams for our community? What are some of the greatest challenges in our community? What do you think would be a good usage for the property behind our church and our current facility? Though the process has just begun, some clear themes are already emerging for the leadership of Emmanuel. Elder Debbie Berryman speaks of her hopes for the congregation as they become more attentive to God's voice through the members of their community.
I think good listening is a ministry. It's like ministry. And that's because if you're a really good listener, you have to be intentional. You have to really turn off all the distractions, the cell phones, the noise, and focus on the person and their needs and what they're trying to communicate with you. And that is something that historically we have not been very good at all. I think that a lot of people have been misinformed. Once you're a Christian, you're done and you're good. They don't see that, or we didn't see it before, as growth. You started here and now you're going on a journey and you're getting better and you're getting more insightful, and you're responding to needs, and you're doing all of these things, and you know, that's a different kind of thought process. We didn't really have that before. I don't think we understood it as well as we do now. And I think now we are looking at all of these people that are coming from the neighborhood, and we're saying, there's potential, there's untapped resources, there's things we could do for them. They just need to talk to us, and we need to listen. You know, hearing is easy, but listening is hard. So listening is an act of love. And I think that if we do it, and we do it intentionally, I guess that's the real word, we have to be intentional about this stuff, then we can get closer to that goal of being true ambassadors for Christ.
In this chapter, you'll read the powerful stories of some congregations that began to bear much greater fruit as they listened intently to their community as well as their members. For instance, Divine Redeemer Presbyterian in San Antonio. Years ago, instead of hiring a Christian education director, this congregation employed a community catalyst, a person whose sole purpose was to listen to the members of the community and to the church and reveal what they called spiritual pregnancies, ideas that God wanted to birth in their midst. It led to a number of new mission initiatives. At Meadowbrook United Methodist in Fort Worth, Texas, by listening to both people in the streets that surrounded them and to a few key members, this church gave birth to a unique Bible study and a 4-H club that gained national notoriety. We leave you with one of the questions found at the end of this chapter in Neighborhood Church. What are some possible ways your congregation could weave a listening presence into your various ministries and programs? We also pray this prayer for you, found at the end of the chapter. Loving God, before we jump into action, help us be still and steep ourselves in your presence. Open our ears and hearts to the lives of our brothers and sisters, especially those whose experience differs from ours. In this way, O God, give us an ever-deepening appreciation for the beautiful diversity of your world. Amen.
Spiritual pregnancies.
Spiritual pregnancies. Isn't that cool?
Wow.
But you gotta burn something somehow.
That's right.
Way to go. I like that.
Yeah, so here's this congregation that specifically wanted to understand what their community was looking for, right? And so who did they ask?
Community.
The community. And they listened specifically for that cool phrase, spiritual pregnancies. Things that it seemed like something's growing in this community, and we can't see it yet, right? There's a space that is opening up in the community that we may not be able to recognize, but our neighbors may be able to recognize. And so they asked their neighbors, Emmanuel Presbyterian asked their neighbors who came to the food pantry, right? Food pantries are like a classic arm's length service to the community thing, right? Here we are, we've got all the food, we've collected it, we put it on shelves, and then you come in and, according to some carefully prescribed formula, are able to get some of the food, right? Food pantries are getting better. The food pantries are starting to recognize the ways to make sure that their neighbors have autonomy in terms of what they're choosing, and make it feel honestly a little bit more like a grocery store in terms of what's good about a grocery store, which is not everything. There are also still ways, you know, some food pantries actually have like physical barriers between the clients and the people serving them. If we contribute to the food pantry, which we should do, if we contribute to the food pantry here on Sunday mornings, and never interact with the neighbors who are receiving that food, we are basically a really inefficient funding source, right? Because the food bank can actually buy food much cheaper than we can buy food, and provide that directly to people through the food pantry. The places we build relationships with neighbors are being there, right? So Emmanuel Presbyterian said, we're going to be there at the food pantry, which they already were, but while we're at the food pantry, we're going to ask three questions, right? We're going to ask, what are your hopes for the neighborhood? What do you think our neighborhood needs? And, asset mapping, what do you think would be a good use for the property right behind our building and church facility, right? We have this thing. We don't know what to do with it. They don't say what they did end up doing with it, at least so far in the materials that we've dealt with, but they recognize we've got this thing that we can make use of. Something comparable did happen here, right? In our relationship with the Faith and Grace Garden, that we recognized something's going on right here in the church's neighborhood, and we have this thing that we just have to mow, so we could have to mow less of it, right? So the question is, how do we ask those questions of our neighbors? Think about your neighborhood. How would you ask the questions? What are your hopes for our community? What do you need in our community? How would you ask your neighbors that?
If you barely know them, it's hardly, I mean, if you don't even know the people on your street, maybe just one person or something, it's kind of hard to knock on door and say, hello, I'm...
So a lack of existing relationships is a barrier for us in terms of being able to build these relationships with our neighbors. Yeah. And I'm going to ask you in a minute about what are some points of contact that you may have with your neighbors. So Emmanuel didn't ask people at the food shelf because they thought that was the best context in which to ask people what are their hopes and dreams for the neighborhood, right? They asked people at the food shelf because that's where the people were, right? They went to where their neighbors were that they actually intersected with. So we'll ask that in a minute. How would you ask, assume think of a neighbor you know, how would you ask them for their sense of hopes for the neighborhood, needs in the neighborhood, places that you could be church in your neighborhood?
So we have a long walk too, mm-hmm. and we tend to know the people right next to us,
yeah.
and not further down that street. Somehow two blocks instead of one block makes a huge difference. And we and a couple neighbors wondered that and worried about that and wanted more communication. And so we had an ice cream social. And it was in one house, but everybody was invited. And quite a few people came. And our block is a little closer and has a different kind of relationship. And that was more commonplace way back when, and it is like in your townhouse association where you have gatherings, but it's harder to do in today's world. One of the things that happened with internet is we thought the whole world would be closer, but internet immediately knows what you like and stops giving you all the information. You get a centered information, mm-hmm. and that creates more of a cocoonism between all of us, thinking everyone thinks like I do because my computer's telling me this is what everyone thinks, but we're getting a select view of information.
So you took as your point of contact an other neighbor that you had
yes.
already a relationship with.
Yes.
And and created a setting for these conversations. What did you learn from those conversations about your neighbors?
We had a lot of, at the end of our block, we had a lot of people that were some language learners that were not from, they were from Asian countries or Central American countries, and we didn't know their. One of the women that I got to know that day gives me gifts like all the time. Mm-hmm. There's different cultural relationships that they're expecting. The Asian family was more reserved. Mm-hmm. The Hispanic family was more outgoing and wanted to come over and come over and come over. And you had to kind of change what you thought because the relationships were different. And that was a unique learning experience that most of us had.
Right.
So it was a good experience.
Yeah, so you learned about a specific set of neighbors who had a specific need in terms of being English language learners, and you also learned about the sort of the cultures present on your block, and probably learned some skills about how you wanted to respond culturally in each of those relationships. Yeah.
Did you find after doing the ice cream social that any of the neighbors got to be more interactive? Because the reason I ask that is a couple of years ago there was a person that moved in pretty central in our on our street, and she and her husband and family decided they were going to have a block party, mm-hmm. which, if you know, West Des Moines is no longer legal, so you have to do it on the sidewalk and then somebody's driveway. Anyway, they took these flyers all around the area, and we all, many people stopped in. Most of us didn't know anybody really that well, and but it never went any further.
It didn't.
No. I mean, we some of us that knew each other and said, well, I haven't seen you for a long time, but then we kind of got back into our own lives again. And one of the things I learned about our street is that it's changed. It's older, but it's also the young ones moving in are full-time working people. They're not even home. When I moved into that street, there were lots of in-home mothers, and we all got together for coffee, and the children played together, and we did all kinds of things together.
Yeah.
Now, even if we wanted to, if I were to walk down the street on a given weekday, nobody's home.
Mm-hmm.
And
we found that too.
And if you go on the weekends, then they're usually at the soccer game, the baseball game, or the, whatever with the kids or any of that interactive. Most I'll see anybody will be at caucuses, and then you know who the other Democrats are, or Republicans. And, you know,
we did the same thing. We did have a caucus shortly after, too. We did a lot of the same things. We have two neighbors that are retired and determined that we know each other and build relationships. So those two unique people and their spirit is what's keeping us connected and knowing each other a little better than we would. And it's still centered down to about 8 families,
mm-hmm.
even though there's 30 families on the street. It still ended up with, they're not proximity close, but certain people were more outgoing than other people and continued to build the relationships. We have a pool in our backyard, so initially everybody came over to swim quite a lot, but as the kids got into the teen years, that kind of disappeared, and now we're back to, do we know everybody again, because the houses are changing,
right.
the families are changing, so it does, it changes a lot as the years go on. You don't ever build it and then you got it.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Really.
For decades, probably 40 years, whatever neighborhood we're in, you always know somebody's moving out and somebody new is moving in. And I have baked more pockets than Brill.
Oh, yeah.
I always take Brill out with
our
name.
I always put our name.
Yeah,
yeah,
you
too.
You
do that too.
Yes,
and you meet them. And,
yeah.
And
then you know who
they are. They know who you are. And,
right.
And,
yeah, so that is a point of contact, right? That's an access point into the lives of your neighbors, because you have that opportunity to say, hey, you're new here, right? You're new, I'm not. And, you know, why do you want your neighbors to have your phone number?
Because they want your house.
They watch your house.
You might they have
yeah.
questions.
Yeah, they might have might something to offer.
They might need help.
Right? They might need something. They might not know where to go to get their car
yeah,
taken care of, right?
Yeah.
Or they may
have your son's breakfast.
or have your son's head stitched back together. Some relational moment that you don't even know is coming, but that's an opportunity. Okay, your homework for the week is going to be to identify someone in your neighborhood who you know, who knows someone you don't. Someone in your neighborhood you know, who knows someone you don't.
That changed from last week.
I'm allowing this to push down the road just a little bit. Yeah. Because we're going to want to actually take that big step into sitting down and talking with someone in our neighborhood. And that could be someone we don't know at all. It could be someone we know some but would like to get to know better. But there's someone in your neighborhood who is, I won't even say better connected than you are. You might be, like, quantitatively the best connected person in your neighborhood, Warren. But, but there's surely someone in your neighborhood who knows one of your neighbors that you don't know. Right? Figure out who that person is. Because you never know, they might be able to introduce you to somebody else in your neighborhood that they have always thought you should get to know, right? That they've always thought, oh, yeah, you know, Joan would love so-and-so, or, you know, Anne would just have a great time talking to so-and-so down the street, and I can introduce them, right? I could have them both over for coffee, and then we're telling stories about each other's lives, right? But yeah, that like cold call knocking on somebody's door, that's a bridge too far for me too, right? But there is still an opportunity to use one of the connections that's already there. Whoever that was that baked you cookies or loaned you their snowblower or whatever it is, that you could say, hey, it looks like you know a lot of people in the neighborhood. Who should I get to know in the neighborhood? So you don't even have to like go as far as asking them that question this week, but know who you would ask that question of.
Two quick comments
before
this wraps up. When you mentioned the other day that you were wanting to contact neighbors.
Yeah, did you do it?
You had a thing called a phone book. I probably only have phone numbers on people that lived on our street for probably 20 years.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Newbies, with no longer necessarily being in that phone book, I'd be hard-pressed to start calling different people. And secondly, I want to put a plug in for dog walking. Unfortunately, we lost our dog May of 15, Lucy. I loved walking the dog. Because of what you're saying, especially in the warmer months, they knew who Warren Pitcher was. Mm-hmm. I was Lucy's dad.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
They didn't know the dog's name.
Yeah.
That's right.
And it's not just the people with dogs, people who didn't have, well, the Galantines. Mm-hmm. Those Galantine kids loved Lucy. Now they're two in college and one in high school. But I can't convince Claudia that I need a dog. I need to walk. I can walk without a dog. But
yeah.
The dog really is effective on getting to know. And I say, not just the people with other dogs. And you know, they're mowing yard or something. Now in the winter months, that's not so much. But and I didn't realize that block parties were not legal in West Des Moines anymore.
Well,
I was thinking,
you can't do it on the street.
Well, that's what I think of a block party.
Me too. And we used to do it a long time ago, and I think it got
fun and wonderful.
Well, I appreciate the update, because I was thinking maybe, and we probably, with 42 years.
You have to get everybody to sign a ticket.
petition. You have to sign a petition, and it costs like $200.
Yeah, it's a lot of equipment. Yeah.
So if you keep it off on the street, you can still do it.
Yes, yes. You, if you do it on private property, no problem. But they just won't close the street down.
But it's, and back to Gene's comment, we've been there, like I say, 42 years, and there were lots of stay-at-home moms with their kids out. That really helped get, at least the women get to know each other. And like I say, I don't know, I'd be hard-pressed, other than Claudia and Sandy Stuck, who on our street is a stay-at-home mom.
All right, so that's a different piece of the landscape that the automatic way that we may have thought that this should happen before is no longer automatic. And if we care about having neighborhoods that are connected to each other, and when I hear people say, "My neighborhood, we don't know each other anymore," I choose to interpret that as a lament. And we lament the things that we want to have back. We're not going to get that back in the same shape, right? But there's no reason that our neighborhoods can't still, again, get to know each other. It just means that we approach it differently. So go ahead and read chapter 3. I'm not absolutely confident that we're actually going to talk about chapter 3 next week. We may spend more time talking about this. How do I actually get out to know somebody? But go ahead and read chapter 3 if you're reading along. Even more than that, identify who that is in your neighborhood who knows someone you don't. Who in your neighborhood knows someone you don't? We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening. Learn more about our mission at wdmcovenant.org.